We're going to get into it. Our featured story is about this actual war, and we'll talk about where we are. Now, in many ways, the situation has not changed from last week. The war is unfolding exactly as we knew it would, exactly according to plan. As we talked about at the very beginning, it was a strategic imperative for the White House, for the United States, and Israel for that matter, to go into Iran quickly and decisively win, and decisively means topple the government, not just kill its leaders, but collapse the government, create an unstable situation, a civil war, a revolution, an uprising, regime change, and then leave. That is how we have to fight this war. That is how we have to win it if we're going to. Now we have entered day 10 and victory is nowhere in sight. We have not toppled the government. We haven't won. And maybe the biggest problem is that we have not been able to suppress Iran's ability to counterattack using its missiles. And so what has happened over the past 10 days is that the United States is getting gassed. It's a little rope-a-dope. The United States has the vastly superior technology. Our ammunition and our weapons are more precise, more efficient. We have far more intelligence, and we are using a strategy called multi-domain operations. And that means that in the early days of the war, which initially, if you recall, they said the war would only last 4 days. In those opening days of the war, it appeared very one-sided and that the United States was winning because we unloaded and we unleashed and using every domain of modern warfare, which is space, cyber, air, naval, ground, everything that we have, we marshaled all of it. And using intelligence, combining insights and data, we were able to seriously degrade Iran's weapons systems, their ability to defend themselves, their air force, their navy, missile launch platforms, regime targets, regime members. In a word, we unloaded, we unleashed on Iran in those opening days. And in order for us to win, that would have had to have been sufficient to destroy the government, meaning that someone in the government would surrender, or seeing that the government was paralyzed or disabled, the people would rise up and overthrow the government. After that first phase of the war was completed, Iran emerged on the other side, not unharmed, certainly diminished and degraded. However, two things had changed. One, morale went up. We unloaded on Iran. We martyred the supreme leader of their country. We actually dropped a Tomahawk missile on a school, killing 130 children. And by attacking Iran and creating these apocalyptic scenes of destruction and chaos, what we did, and this is what always happens, is we rallied the people of Iran to support their government. It only makes common sense. If China killed the president and then bombed every city from coast to coast, do you think we would then greet Chinese soldiers as liberators? Or would we rally behind whoever the successor would be against the foreign attack to repel the invasion? Obviously, it would be the latter. So now that the smoke has cleared, the United States and Israel hit Iran with everything that we had. We sunk their navy, destroyed their air force, their anti-aircraft systems. We have some effective control over their airspace, not complete operational control, but maybe in half of the country. Assassinated half of the military and civilian leadership. The smoke is cleared. We hit them with the worst. And now the Iranian people have rallied. And the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, the actual regime, has also rallied. Arguably, the people that are now in charge are more hardline than the people that came before. They're more obstinate. The second thing to change is that Iran's ability to counterattack has not been completely suppressed or destroyed. Now, Iran, as we have talked about, is a huge country. It's three times the size of Iraq, mountains and desert, huge population of 90 million people. The population is dispersed across many large cities, and they have been preparing for this war for decades. So they have transformed their country into effectively a missile and drone factory inside of a fortress. That is what they do. They make ballistic missiles and drones, and they make a lot of them and cheaply, and they make them deep underground so you can't hit them. And these missiles are very mobile as well. So the United States unloaded everything, rallied the government, not destroying it, and the United States did not destroy all of the missiles. So what does that mean? Well, it means that on day 10, even though the United States and Israel have hit Iran 3,000 times and spent, I think it's $3 billion per day so far, Iran is still able to launch missiles without being able to be stopped. And those missiles are hitting the Gulf countries. Those missiles and drones are hitting Bahrain and Qatar and the Emirates. And drones and missiles and projectiles from Yemen are hitting Saudi's eastern province where they have all their oil. Desalination plants are being hit. Other critical infrastructure is being hit. And maybe most importantly, the Strait of Hormuz has been closed. The Strait of Hormuz is a narrow passage which unlocks all of the Persian Gulf oil. That is from where the Persian Gulf oil is shipped into the Indian Ocean and out to the rest of the world. So all that oil in Saudi Arabia, in Iran, in Bahrain, in Qatar, in the Emirates, all these oil-rich sheikhdoms and kingdoms, you know, we identify the Middle East with oil, it all comes from the Persian Gulf, and it all is transited by sea out the Strait of Hormuz, which Iran is strangling by bombing it relentlessly. And so the commercial traffic in the Strait of Hormuz has been reduced by 80%. Consequently, that is 20% of the world's oil supply goes through the Strait of Hormuz. Global energy supplies are now severely constrained. So why did the United States need to topple Iran's government quickly and decisively in the first week? Because if the government isn't toppled or doesn't wave the white flag, and if the government is still able to launch missiles, in other words, if the regime and its missile arsenal is intact, then that means that indefinitely, Iran can shut down the Middle East. They can shut down all the oil, and they can shut down the Gulf. People can't fly in and out of these countries, which specialize in banking and tourism, things that are heavily dependent on people being able to enter and exit the airspace. And the oil is shut down, which is now affecting every country in the world. It's affecting gas prices here. It's affecting energy supplies in Japan, LNG in Europe, in China, all around the world. And so now, this is transitioning into a war of attrition, where the United States is dropping lots of ordnance on Iran, hoping that we kill enough people and we destroy all their missiles, while at the same time, Iran is trying to stay alive and retaliate enough in a race against time. And if the United States can collapse their regime or destroy all their weapon systems, then we have prevailed. If we don't do that in time, and Iran is able to keep replacing and keep succeeding the leadership, and if they can keep launching missiles, then that means that oil prices are going to keep going up. There's going to be a global recession. And that means the fertilizer that comes out of the Gulf is going to get choked off too. Copper, uranium, other critical minerals, tourism, investment, capital pouring into the Gulf, that's going to be shut down too. And so Iran is going to make it hurt for everybody. This is a situation that we now find ourselves in. And this was prophesied, by the way. The generals in Washington warned Trump for months that this is exactly what was going to happen. There was a report in Washington Post and Politico a week before the war started saying that the generals were not on board, that they had warned Trump, there's no way to topple the regime. It's impossible. If there was an opportunity in January because of the protests, if that was the case, that window of opportunity is now closed, and there is no way we can collapse the regime. And if we can't collapse the regime through air power and sea power, then you're going to get a war of attrition. And a war of attrition is a war that you cannot win. It's unlikely that you can kill all 200,000 IRGC from the air. Probably impossible. It's unlikely you can destroy all of Iran's missiles from the air. Once again, probably impossible. And you can't bring down the government and make them surrender. So if that's the case, then we get into this grinding war, and eventually we run out of missile interceptors. Our bombs are more costly, and we're going to run out of them. And our economy is going to start to hurt just as bad and then worse as Iran's economy. Now, that brings us to where we are today. And it's interesting because the markets are spooked. Over the weekend, crude oil was trading for $120 a barrel, up from, I think, 60. So global energy prices have exploded because of the conflict. Because again, the supply is very constrained because a fifth of it is stuck in the Persian Gulf. It can't get out because Iran is bombing it. And so now the United States and our allies are starting to feel it. Japan is starting to feel it. Europe is starting to feel it. The Gulf countries are starting to feel it, and they're getting worried. They're getting worried because their oil is stuck and their tanks are filling up. Their reserves of oil are filling up. They're going to have to cut production, which is very costly. And they're worried because their critical infrastructure is being hit too. And so now the pressure is back on the United States. Now, what does Trump do? Well, you have two options. You can look for an off-ramp and try to de-escalate. What does that look like? If we retreat, if we have a truce, a ceasefire, if we stop bombing Iran, maybe they will let us have the oil go through the Strait of Hormuz and we could have economic relief. And that's critical. Because if we don't get that oil flowing sooner rather than later, you're going to have a global recession in a few weeks. It's going to get really bad. So option one is you try to find an off-ramp, try to find an exit and de-escalate. If we stop dropping bombs on Iran, and I don't know how you walk that one back, but let's say you do, and then you count on Iran stopping their closure of the Strait of Hormuz, then you can open that back up and you're in good shape. The only other option is that you go in the other direction. Rather than looking for an exit, you escalate. You hit them somehow even harder. And what would be the end game there? Well, if you topple the government, then there is no command and control to order the closure of the strait. You get a regime change, you get a change in policy, you open up the strait. Or two, you send in boots on the ground. And you send in some limited tactical force to disable Iran's missile launchers or to attack the nodes of government or something like this in a bid to try to prevent them from launching the missiles. Maybe you organize on the ground. You get the Kurds. You get an anti-government force and you try to overthrow the government. But these are really the two lanes here. Is the war going to keep going on and on? Will it keep grinding on and we keep killing their leadership and we keep bombing them? And it's more pain and misery for them and acutely for their leadership until they wave that white flag. Or are we going to back away in what would be a strategic defeat for the United States and a victory for Iran in the hopes that they stop bombing the strait? Those are the two options. Now, what was Trump's plan here exactly? So Trump goes into the conflict, and we sort of at this point understand what the idea was, which is that Netanyahu was going to bomb Iran anyway, so they say. So we had to join them, because if we didn't, then Iran would retaliate and they would hit us harder than they would otherwise be able to be if we and Israel struck them jointly first. So we hit Iran hoping that if we just hit them hard enough, everyone is telling us it's impossible. Everyone is telling us it's impractical. But if we hit them hard enough, we're going to knock them off. And with a hope and a prayer, that'll be the end of it. And then we win. And then it's just like Venezuela and no harm, no foul. It's a big victory. Everything's great. Okay, well, what was plan B exactly? What's plan B? Everyone's telling Trump this isn't going to work. Everyone's telling him it's impossible. It's not going to go the way you think. So what's the backup plan? Let's say your gamble doesn't pay off. Then what do we do? Well, we're finding out that they have no idea. They don't even know. They didn't prepare for this. Because now they're not even giving us a clear answer. Okay, we tried it. It didn't work. Now there's some real problems here. There is a global recession on the horizon, and it's coming closer every single day. Oil prices are exploding. We're running out of interceptors. So are the Gulf countries. If we run out of interceptors, then Iran is just going to keep throwing drones at us, keep throwing missiles at us. It never ends. What are the other options? Escalate? How's that even going to work? How do you even bomb them harder? Just keep slaughtering in the hopes that eventually someone will surrender? Seems to be having the reverse effect. Didn't plan for that contingency. You can't bomb all the missile launch platforms. I don't even think that's possible. So the question is, now what? Trump doesn't even know. And today, this is the report from the New York Times. He said simultaneously at one press conference that the war is over. It's going to be over soon. We completed the mission. And it sounds like he's getting ready to retreat and withdraw. Then later in the day, he said, actually, we're going to hit them harder than ever. And the war is far from over. And we're going to keep killing the leadership. We're not happy with the successor to the Ayatollah. This is from the New York Times. It says, quote, after a day of conflicting signals about when the war against Iran might end, President Trump struck a belligerent tone Monday evening, warning of even more aggressive action if Iranian leaders tried to cut off the world's energy supply. Mr. Trump said, quote, we will hit them so hard that it will not be possible for them or anybody else helping them to ever recover that section of the world. Earlier in the day, the president suggested that the U.S.-Israeli war could be near an end. He said the war is very complete, pretty much. He said we're very far ahead of schedule. Those comments appeared to ease market fears of a prolonged war. Oil prices dropped and stocks rose, but after markets closed for the day, Mr. Trump switched gears. He said, we have won in many ways, but not enough. We go forward more determined than ever to achieve ultimate victory that will end this long-running danger once and for all. Asked later if the war with Iran will be over this week, Trump said no, but soon, very soon. The international benchmark oil price, priced below $70 last month, briefly jumped to almost $120 late Sunday night, then fell after the G7 said they were considering intervening to bring prices down. It then fell again after Mr. Trump's remarks to CBS, ending the day below $90. Okay, so we are in the middle of a real problem here. We went into this hoping to achieve a quick victory, just like Venezuela. Chop the head off the snake, someone else comes in, negotiates a quick peace, and it's over. But that is not happening. It's not happening anytime soon. Trump assassinated the leader, assassinated half the leadership, destroyed all their weapons, and they haven't surrendered and they keep going. And now global oil prices are spiking. This is going to cause a lot of inflation, and it is going to squeeze every major world economy, and it will be a contagion. And at the same time, the situation, again, it gets more precarious because our ability to even intercept those missiles is diminishing all the time. We have about a 15 to 20% interception rate. For every drone and missile that goes up, we're launching five, and we're running out every single day. It's debated how many we have. Some sources debate the timeline here, but we don't have enough for a protracted conflict. So what's the plan? Well, again, it's either you back off or you go further in. We don't even know. Trump says at once, we need an unconditional surrender, which will never happen. We need an unconditional surrender, total victory, once and for all. On one hand, this is the language he's using. Do you know what it takes to get an unconditional surrender? You have to nuke them. They will never surrender without preconditions. Why would they? Do you know what an unconditional surrender means? It means a surrender with no conditions. It means complete supplication, complete deference. It means they give up their country as a colony to the United States. That's what a surrender with no conditions means. It means you could do whatever you want to us. Do you know when countries have unconditionally surrendered, World War II, when we invaded Germany with the Soviet Union, and when we nuked Japan. So that's off the table. They're never going to unconditionally surrender. But this is the language they're using. Total victory, unconditional surrender, once and for all. And that would tend to imply we're not going to leave the regime intact. We're not going to walk away with a deal. We're not going to retreat halfway through. That sounds like we're going to fight it through to the end, to the last Iranian. But on the other hand, he's telling everybody, well, we basically won. We blow up all their stuff. Their navy is sunk. Their regime is reeling. So we won and it's over now. Did he just say that so that oil prices would go down? That's what it sounds like. Because he said that earlier in the day. Early in the day, he says the war's over. Then the market's closed. And then he goes on TV later and says, actually, we want an unconditional surrender. We want to once and for all finish the job. And if that is the case, well, then again, how are you going to do that? What's the big idea? If you can't get the leadership to surrender, what are you going to do? Keep killing them? You know, there are 200,000 members of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard. Are you going to bomb 200,000 of them? Then what? They have thousands of missiles. According to the New York Times, they still have half their stockpile of missiles. How are you going to destroy the rest of them? 3,000 bombs dropped in 10 days. You got about half. Are we going to go for another 10 days? Do we have another 3,000 bombs in us? Do we know where the other missiles are? Then what? Are we going to cripple their ability to make new ones or new drones? What do you do when we run out of interceptors? We are up a creek without a paddle. Trump cannot escalate because there's no popular support for it. There's no plan. I don't even know that we have the personnel to carry out an invasion of Iran. There's no ground force, not combined with the Kurds or anybody else. I just don't see how that happens. We also can't de-escalate, can't retreat. If the Trump administration walks away without toppling the regime, then that's a strategic victory for Iran. Forget about a mass protest. That's over. You've permanently rallied the people to the side of the government. And what does the government immediately start to do? They start building hundreds of drones and missiles all over again. Maybe they don't even stop. Maybe they keep the Strait of Hormuz closed because they are now in a strategic war with the United States and Israel. We've demonstrated that every negotiation with Iran is a farce. We negotiated with them last year, then we let Israel sneak attack them. We negotiated with Iran this year, then we did a sneak attack against them. So you can't make a deal. So what exactly is going to happen here? They're not even telling us. They're not even being transparent. And it seems like they have no plan. The administration doesn't even know what's going on. Today, Pete Hegseth says we're in a war with Iran. J.D. Vance says we're in a conflict. Carolyn Leavitt says it's an operation. What is it? No one knows. Last week, the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, said, well, Israel was going to attack anyway, so we joined them. They forced our hand. Then an hour later, Trump goes on TV and says, no, we forced their hand. We were going to attack. We had to get Israel in on it. Then U.S. intelligence says that a Tomahawk missile blew up a school full of children in Iran. Then Trump on Air Force One contradicts his own military and says, actually, that was an Iranian projectile that fell. Totally false, total lie. Then in the same day, you've got Trump, we're in, but also we're out. We finished, but we're not even close to being done. I think we're ready. The war's almost over. We completed our objectives, but also we're going to wipe them off the map and we want an unconditional surrender. And you want to know the cruel irony? I remember before the war started, how many people said it wasn't going to be like Iraq? Because those people should be like publicly executed after receiving the death penalty from a court of law, from a jury of their peers through the legal process. Because I seem to recall that 2 weeks ago, all the Trump shills were telling us, well, hey, just because Bush and Obama couldn't prosecute a war doesn't mean that we can't. People said, Be careful not to overlearn the lessons of Iraq. Don't overlearn that lesson. We can fight a war in Iran. Just because Bush messed it up doesn't mean that we will. They said, not everything is Iraq. You have Iraq disease. Look at what we did last year. We got in, we got out, and it was all great. Remember? And, you know, theoretically, I suppose that's true in a sense. Is every engagement, is every conflict Iraq? No. But this one is. This one is exactly like that. And it becomes more like it every single day. No exit strategy. No clearly defined objectives. Weapons of mass destruction that don't exist. A plan to topple the government and no plan for what happens in the aftermath. It's literally the exact same as Iraq. They made us believe that this administration was, because of its competence, because of the core ideology of Trump, that we were in no danger of a never-ending conflict with mission creep, that we would get stuck in, right? You break it, you buy it, you cause a lot of problems, then you're trapped forever. They said it won't be like that this time. Well, we're 10 days in. Are you winning? What's the plan? What's the big idea? Did we get in and get out? How's that Iranian regime doing? How's the Strait of Hormuz? Still closed? And the best part is we knew all of this would happen. We knew that. We knew that Iran would retaliate with missiles. We knew they would close the Strait of Hormuz. We know the economics of it. We know the geography, the topography. We know everything about it. And they just simply did not prepare. What's the plan B? What's the exit strategy? What's the plan now? Are we going to go to April? Is Trump going to bluff his way into April, trying to convince the Iranians he's serious? How many more days? And what do you do if they don't surrender? You're just going to back down and then what? Pick it up 6 months later? You're going to have to. If we back down right now, you're never going to make a deal with the Iranians after this. You just assassinated their head of state. Now you're going to make a nuclear deal or any kind of deal? No, now you got to finish the job, whether it's tomorrow, next week, next month, a year from now. We're in. And I now worry that the next move is they're going to try to manufacture a pretext for an escalation. And you all know what I'm talking about. Maybe that's a false flag. And I hate to say that, but I would be remiss if I didn't. How can you get everybody not only on board, but enthusiastically on board with a rapid escalation in Iran? Maybe an Iranian sleeper cell kills thousands of people. How about all that unaccounted for uranium in Iran, which they're talking about? How about the sleeper cell activation code that they're talking about? All these, the shooter in Austin, the Australian flight, this situation in New York City. That's going to be the next shoe to drop. An Iranian sleeper cell is going to kill a bunch of people, and then we have to go to war. Now, I don't know that with certainty, but I would never rule it out. Closest ally is not going to let us walk away from this one. You think closest ally is going to let that window of opportunity close? Oh, well, we tried it. We bombed Iran's nuclear program. Then we bombed their country 3,000 times. We killed the supreme leader. Well, we gave it a shot. We did our best. Now it's over forever. Is that characteristic of them? They're going to walk away now. They're going to use what little leverage they have over the White House, what little leverage they have, and fail against the interest of Wall Street or something? I don't think so. So we have options, none of them good. Either we walk away and it's a strategic defeat and we come back eventually, or we escalate now in the hopes that we can solve it. And if we escalate, there's no guarantee it will even work. It may just draw us further into the conflict with boots on the ground, or a nuclear weapon might be deployed. And then maybe in the middle, you have some kind of action that would justify an escalation because the war is so unpopular. And I wouldn't say that's likely, but I also wouldn't rule it out completely. And that is the grim politics of a U.S.-Israel war in Iran for regime change. We knew it was going to be like this. And I try to warn you, we knew it would go this way. We knew Trump would bring us here. We knew it wouldn't work. We knew who would be responsible. And yet here we are, all the same, doing it all over again. And there are exactly zero good options for any of us. So it's pretty tough out there. But that's your update. We're going to move on. We're going to take a look at our super chats. We'll see what you guys have to say about all this. That's all I have to say about it. And we'll talk a little bit more about the war, I assume, tomorrow. I just don't know how that's even possible. How do you sleepwalk us into another endless war in the Middle East and you're Donald Trump? The bar is on the floor. It's incredible. I thought I had complaints before. He never says white people. He keeps talking about the embassy and black unemployment. That's not enough deportations. He brought us into a regime change war in Iran. The bar is on the floor. You elect Trump at the minimum to not do this. That's the only reason you do this. You could say Trump sucks at everything else. We voted for him because he'll keep us out of a war with Iran because that's what the Jews want from us. And people still defend him. Oh, you just don't get it. You're just not serious. Look, it'll be over before you know it. Okay, man. And then they tell you, you're not MAGA. War with Iran always was. Okay.